There's a light shining down in your heart. Let it shine in right from the start. Let's don't waste our time tonight. Join right in, let's do this thing right. Come on, let's do this thing right. Stomp your hands, stomp your feet.
I'm so glad to have Randy Hill as my guest today on Terry Clark and Friends, because he definitely is one of my oldest friends.
But don't rub that in.
That's a drummer.
We may have
anyway.
Gray hair, but
they die young. I think.
I'm very immature for my age. Lord have mercy.
Randy Hill was not only a whole bunch of other things before that, but he's the drummer for Liberation Suite, who invited Dwayne, my brother, and I to join them when they moved from Belfast to London. We had been involved in
Hill Country Faith Fellowship.
And they had a festival every year, and the band that I was playing in at the time, Children of Faith, we would go there regularly. So we got acquainted with those guys, but we heard about you guys, but never actually met you until you came home, and there we were, and you were, all at the same time on the Hill Country Faith Festival. And so we got to meet you, and suddenly we're on the plane to join you in London.
But wait, there's more.
There's way.
You didn't have a drummer that day you performed, and I played drums for you.
I did not remember.
You remember that?
It's coming back to me now. Thank you very much.
Was
did
that
you just make
drummer?
That up?
No, it's the truth. That's how I remember it. I did play drums for you that day.
Well, that's very special then. Well, we didn't even know each other at that point.
No, we didn't.
You'll just sit in with anybody, won't you?
I'm easy that way.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes, and then a great adventure began in both our lives.
Yeah, well, it had already been pretty revved up for you guys. I mean, you'd been in Belfast for over a year, right?
We lived in Belfast for not quite a year, but
not quite
a good part of a year.
And that you guys would set up your stacks right in the middle of Corn Square and outplay the gunfire.
We were just a bunch of dumb Texans being led by God to some place we had no idea about. And
I think God loves us guys, us hard-headed Texans.
We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what we were getting into.
All we know is, well, hey, let's do it.
I'll never forget, I went to the public library in San Marcos before we went over, because I had no clue. Yeah. I knew we were going to Northern Ireland. I didn't know what Northern Ireland was. It was Ireland, you know. So me and a friend went to the public library and checked out a couple of books on Ireland. And we looked through it, picture books, and there was sheep and green hills and old stone walls. But this is going to be cool, dude.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. And then you saw Belfast.
And then we got on the plane. And we flew out of Montreal, Canada, because there was a youth fair at the time. It was real cheap. Mm-hmm. If you were under 21, we were all under 21. I was 18. My wife was 18. And so we drove straight through from San Marcos to Montreal in 3 days, nonstop, and put our van that we had been given. It was a Dodge Maxi van. Yeah. All our equipment inside it. All of us stuffed inside it.
Did it already have the airline seats in it?
No. It was just regular seats. Those were donated later on in the story. But then, so we got the van at the very last minute onto a ship heading for Manchester. Mm-hmm. They stayed late for us. They had closed, and they opened back up for us and got it on the ship and closed it up and sent it away. And we got on Aer Lingus out of Montreal. And I'll never forget, we were halfway over the Atlantic at that point, and there was a couple rows in front of us. There was a guy reading a newspaper, and it said Bloody Friday. There was bombing somewhere. And I was going, Bloody Friday. And we asked him, you know, what's going on? He said, don't you know there's a war going on? No, we don't.
Pretty common news at that time.
But what about the sheep and the green hills? Wait a minute. And so that was my first clue. Maybe the guys already knew. Maybe they tricked me and they didn't tell me anything about it.
They wouldn't want to tell you about it if they did know it.
No, they knew I'd freak out.
At that time, I might try to get off the plane.
So we went over, and then we arrived in Dublin Airport, and the customs guys there said, what are you doing here? You know, all these guys. And we said, well, we're a Christian band. We're heading up to Northern Ireland to preach the gospel through our music. I just looked at him. Say, what? Step into this room over here.
You got your flak jacket?
Here's a room over here we want to talk to you in for a little bit. 4 hours later, we had missed the flight. We had missed the last train out of Dublin to Belfast, so we had no way to get there. So we had to call ahead to the contact that we had in Belfast, and they said, we know somebody in Dublin. It was a single mom, I think, that you can stay with.
Goody.
And so we stayed in her apartment, her flat, for, I don't know, 2 days until the train started running again.
Wow.
And so then the train started running again, and we took the train up to Belfast, arrived at Great Victoria Station next to the Europa Hotel, which they call the blow-up, it had recently blown up, and the train station blown up with it. So we got in there, and it was raining inside the train station, and we're going, and Dawn, my wife, was looking for a bathroom, and it had a sign, the bathrooms are closed due to bombing. Great, okay. Yeah. And
let me add to that carnage.
It was raining inside the station, and the guy that took our, you know, the visa guy, didn't check for visas, didn't. So you got any cameras and you got any cigarettes or anything? No, okay. So he let us go. And we waited outside for our ride to come. And I remember standing out with the rest of the guys. We're all lined up looking at the street in front of the Great Victoria train station. And it was like being on the Twilight Zone back in the 60s. It was all black and white TV, seemed like. There was nobody there. It was the end of the world. Nobody on the street. And then all of a sudden, these truckloads of British soldiers drove by with their guns, you know, pointed up, and we're going, oh my word.
We just what dropped we into the middle.
Where are the sheep? Where are the sheep?
Have they killed all the sheep? Oh no.
The girl that was going to pick us up got stopped by one of the, I don't know if it was UDA, the IRA, or somebody, and they wanted to take her car and set it on fire and use it for a blockade.
But
she was a
much.
Nurse. Susan, I'm a nurse, and she was, and she said, I've got to go downtown and pick somebody up. So they let her go, and she picked us up, and that's how we got to our new home in Belfast.
Wow. Those sweet terrorists.
I can't believe
they did that. They had compassion for a minute. That's one of the climaxes of the story, definitely, that I wasn't in on. We went back to Belfast several times, though, as Liberation Suite, and when we would go back there, I've got pictures of people, three abreast, in the rain, lined up clear around Ulster Hall,
mm-hmm. yeah.
waiting to get in. Because you guys have become so notorious. And anytime you guys would show up in town, all of the little munchkins out of the
bovers, they call them bovers.
Bovers.
They had short pants.
And they lived under the city. These little kids would come out.
That was the Wizard of Oz, man. Yeah. You're getting your stories confused.
But they were really there. They would come up and go. They would head for you guys because you had evidently befriended, some of you had befriended them while you would set up on the streets.
We played so many places on the streets and so many coffee houses and such.
Yeah.
Can I back up and tell you one story?
Absolutely. We're going to keep backing up.
Okay. Because the story's got to be told. That van that we put in the crate arrived in England about a week and a half later. So yeah. We sent a couple of the guys over. I think it was Paul and David. And we sent them to pick up the van. They opened the crate, and the back windows of the van were busted out. And there was no equipment in there, except for a bass amp head in there. And the guy, the insurance guy there said, did you get insurance before you left? No, we couldn't get insurance because of there was a last-minute thing, and we didn't get insurance. We didn't know when we were supposed to get insurance. He said, you should have got it. insurance. And Paul said, I think it was Paul, he said, well, God's going to take care of it. You know, we're here on a mission from God. He's going to take care of it, you know. And okay. So they left, they came back, and we prayed for days, a couple weeks, I don't know, I can't remember the time period exactly. God, we're here now. We think you sent us here.
Right.
Now we have no equipment to play with. We're not supported by a church financially. We're not supported by anybody. Crazy. And days later, the insurance guy called and said, I want you to come back here and tell me about your God, because they stopped these kids at a traffic on a traffic stop, and they had all your equipment in their truck.
Oh, my goodness.
And so Paul and a couple of guys went back over, talked to the insurance guy, and got our equipment back, and that's when we started.
Wow.
It was like a sign from God saying, hey, you know,
absolutely.
You know, I just wanted to mess with you for a little while.
That was a signature in fresh ink. Man,
if you had any doubts, then here you go.
And that was just the beginning for all of us, because all of us lived like that the rest of our lives. I mean, we still do.
Yeah.
Because we count on God's God.
And I look back at not just those times, the times you and I spent together and all the times since then, over 30, 40 years, that God has done things like that. I mean,
like
he's continually
bringing food to the doorstep.
Yeah,
at Ruxley Lodge, and when there wasn't anything in the cupboard except maybe a Swede.
The Swede.
A big Swede. You'd make great food out of that, though.
And Paul and Howard would eat it all up. But yes, I treasure those times because I look back on frequently when I'm going through something and thinking, don't you remember? And God tells you that, you know, remember
exactly.
Those times. You know, I got hit head on one night back in the 80s, late 80s by a drunk driver on the freeway in outside between San Antonio and Austin. I was driving back from a gig from San Antonio at night, heading back to Austin with Barry.
Say hello and thank you.
And our lead guitar for Liberation Suite. We were playing in a country band at that point. And this Jeep crossed over the median of the freeway, heading straight for me. I thought, oh my God, he's going to try to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Now that day, I had a smaller car originally. It was a little Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
And it had car problems. And I'd taken it to a mechanic that day. And they traded it out with a large, gigantic behemoth of a old car, you know.
Yeah.
So I had that. And that Jeep hit my side, spun us around. We ended up rolling down the median to the frontage road, and I came to down there, and I said, Barry, what happened? We got hit. I said, really? We got out. And by the time we'd gotten out, on the freeway was full of cars. There was ambulances there. There was police cars. Lights were flashing. We walked up the median and said, hey, we were hit too. Because he hit somebody behind us and really hurt them.
Oh, wow. So you both climbed up the median.
And they didn't know we were down there.
No broken bones or anything.
Because the car was down there, too. I didn't have a scratch.
Wow.
So I look on things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, though, in the early days, those experiences really cemented some monuments into our lives, huh?
Yes, they did.
Has designed our lives ever since,
yeah.
Basically. Our marriages and our families.
Well, and thank God, Dawn and I are still together. You know, she experienced it all with me, as did Nancy over there.
Yeah. There is a God. That's proof of
that. She,
there's
poor
proof
thing
that
married,
they would still be with us.
Or they married musicians. Didn't they get warned by their mothers before that happened?
Yes, but they were just obstinate enough to keep going.
We were just so good looking. And
oh, yeah.
Was that
there's
it?
That. There's that. Y'all don't look up any pictures of us. Well, let's jump back to your upbringing. I know this was really the rev up of our upbringing, the period that you're talking about. But before all that, the home you grew up in, the family you were a kid in, and all that must have had some kind of preparatory experiences to harden you enough that you could just walk up that median. I didn't know why.
I don't know. I was born on a farm. Not born on a farm. I was born in San Marcos, Texas.
Yeah.
1955. I was raised on my father's farm. It had been his grandfather's. My grandmother had died. My grandfather was living with us at the time. Mm-hmm. So I grew up till the time I was 13 when my grandfather passed away, with my grandfather living in the house with us.
Yeah.
Which was really cool because we did a lot of talking and I learned a lot about the family history and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, where's that today?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
it's lost.
So that was really good. It was a farm out in the middle of nowhere in Texas, and I was the oldest in the family and bored and not a farm boy whatsoever.
Really?
No.
I was make you a farm boy.
So
either,
disappointing to the family. You know, I could get the cows in and out. I could feed them and water them, but other than that, I had no interest in being a farmer. I was a drummer. From the time I was in first grade, I knew I was going to be a drummer.
Yeah. You were banging on everything.
I was banging on everything. So, and yeah, I had oil cans, gas cans outside the tractor house, is what they call it, tractor
shed. Well, that's why the cows came.
And I'd sit out there with tree branches and bang those things until I got a real drum set when I was about 13.
Yeah. What a story. What about spiritually? What was the spiritual atmosphere at that time?
I was raised Lutheran, and we went to the Lutheran church regularly. And that goes back many generations of my family. So I knew there was a God. It was very boring to me. I can remember sitting in church being very bored, like many other kids that age. And it wasn't until I was in downtown San Marcos one day with my friend. I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking for some marijuana. And we had no direction in my life whatsoever. I'd done stupid things. I won't go into, but they were stupid. And we were in a coffee shop that morning waiting to meet this person who was going to sell us the marijuana, which was against the law back then. Here in Oregon, it's a national pastime now.
Just a footnote there.
But anyway, for I digress. We walked across the street, and a friend of mine who'd run the lights and stuff for a psychedelic band I had back in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And he had become a Christian, apparently. And he met us halfway across the street, and he gave me this little plastic fish. And it had the word agape engraved on it. And I said, cool, agape. He said, no, it means God's love, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
And I said, well, cool, thank you. So I made that into a little necklace. It had a hole in it, and I hung it around in a leather strap. And he said, by the way, we're going to a coffee house this coming weekend, maybe it was, in Austin. And they're going to have music and donuts and stuff. We said, cool.
Oh, donuts.
I got the munchies. Let's go.
Yeah, that's cool.
And So we all rode in this little VW bus. There's a group of young kids, and it was all young kids.
Yeah.
And took us to a place called The Well in Austin. It was one of the first coffee houses in Austin. And I remember walking in there and just feeling the love in there. It was just like, wait a minute, what is this? What's going on,
Yeah.
And they were singing. It was an acoustic band, so I didn't like acoustic groups. I was in Led Zeppelin and stuff. But these guys really they were showing love for each other and for the crowd.
Yeah, that was novel.
And I thought, wow. And then somebody said, do you want to accept Jesus? And I said, sure enough, I want what this
give
is.
Give me some of that.
So the guy came out, some younger guy, took us upstairs, and we prayed the prayer. And, fireworks went off in my brain.
Whoa.
No visions, but it was powerful.
Yeah.
I was completely changed, man. I stopped doing drugs,
amazing.
Stopped smoking, stopped doing all this stuff at that point. And well, it's been a bed of roses ever since then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the later stories prove that, right? But it really is, because the roses are different for us than for the rest of the people.
That's right.
That don't have the fireworks that went off in your heart,
yeah,
because that continues to prepare us for the next. It's like a bed of roses that's part of the threshold through to the new stage of our lives.
Well, you can pretty much go through anything.
That's right.
It may take a while, but you'll go through it.
Well, you find out that if you persist, you don't die from it.
No. Well, you may, but
you
it'll be all right.
In some form or another.
It'll be all right. When I became a Christian that night, I was playing with a secular band of my own, and the rest of my friends, who later became guys in the Lip Suite, also became Christians that same summer. Half of us were playing in a rock band, and we were going, now what do we do? We're Christians in a rock band. We're the only Christians in a rock band in the whole world. No,
yeah.
We had no clue. We're in what do you know in Texas? You don't get news in Central Texas back then.
Robert Plant?
There was,
maybe?
There was no, WWW, and barely had radio. So we thought we were the only ones. And so we kept playing our dances. We started writing stuff related to our experiences and putting a nice dance beat to that and incorporating that into our music. And that's the way we did it for a long time, just playing record dances, playing right. Steppenwolf and Led Zeppelin,
and
then playing our own stuff.
Staples.
Yeah. And they didn't know. People didn't know. They're just like, okay,
yeah,
got a great beat. I can dance to it. I'll give it a 10.
Exactly. That's the real stuff, man. And everything seems to be, when you fast forward into the world that we're now living in, it seems to be all just kind of paper walls.
Mm-hmm.
But those things built solid concrete into our lives because they were real experiences. They weren't virtual experiences. They weren't just emotional experiences. They totally transformed us.
It was a move of God, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, and it had to be to teach us to live the life that we're living now.
And somehow the kids nowadays have to get this. And
I
don't want to feel like an old guy sitting around with gray hair telling old stories,
exactly,
even though I am. But there's a lot of truth in there that I hope they can hear and
to
research.
A certain extent, we all have to find it for ourselves. And the Lord is waiting for us to drop in the slot so that He can blow our minds.
And He'll direct you, too, you know?
Yeah, and He directs you there. I mean, everything is designed before the foundation of the world, and it's not set in stone about your choices. You could have made a different choice when He blew your mind at the coffee house, at the well, but you didn't because you were set up already for that moment to happen. I mean, you wanted marijuana, and you got the real stuff.
Yeah.
And it was way better than any marijuana than you ever got. And,
yes, it was.
And the point is, these formative interactions with the Holy Spirit, with the person of Jesus, I mean, there's only one Holy Spirit, and that's God's, because He's the only pure one. He's the only holy one. And holy just means outside of our disposable, degrading, perishing world that we live in. He's from outside, so you call that holy. And He wants to make us holy as well. And He actually commands that. Be holy, because I'm your dad and I'm holy.
I hate that part of the Bible.
I know.
Is that wrong to say on the radio?
But I think the reason we hate it is that we think that holy means perfect.
No.
It's not perfect. It means just checked out of residence in this sinking ship.
Mm-hmm.
Still occupying till it does sink, as long as He keeps us here, for that very purpose that you just said. We want our lives to be a witness. And the more I read God's book, the more I realize that me being a witness is not my decision to be a witness.
Right.
My decision that makes me a witness is to be completely concentrated and surrendered and more intimate every day with my Father and with my big brother Jesus.
And then it becomes natural in your life.
Yeah,
you know, you're just like,
slowly
I'm not going
surely
out street witnessing this morning and going to stand on the corner, wave a flag.
But no, wherever you are,
I'm going to drive a cab, which I do part-time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have somebody in my cab for 15 minutes, and I'm not going to preach at them.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask them stories about their
the
lives. I'll ask stories about them and get to know them a little better. Some are regulars and some of them are now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe at some point I'll be able to share that, but I'm not going to jam it down their throats.
No, you don't have to.
No.
I mean, it wasn't jammed down our throat.
No, it wasn't.
The Lord was a little bit pushy with me. But
well, He had to be for you.
But it was only because I'm hard-headed, and He loves hard-heads because we learn things the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we learn it,
they stick.
you've learned it then, and it's part of scars and bruises and brokenness that doesn't go away, but God fills in the voids there with something so much better and so exciting that you just want more all the time.
Yes, and those stories, they don't end. You know, our little stories we're thinking about way back when, 40 years ago.
No, those are just little spots in the continuity.
Yeah, there's little highlights, everything. And it keeps going till you're dead.
Absolutely.
And you know that.
Really, it revs up then. Who knows what's going to happen?
Oh, my word. It gets more exciting.
This was this exciting and hard. What's the next?
Yes.
But we're going to have new equipment.
We want to encourage you. It gets harder from here, but you'll make it.
Well, it's kind of like your story about the van, because the windows were broken, all the equipment was taken, but we're getting new equipment.
Thank goodness. It's all wore out. The wires are frayed.
And the Lord's done that with us before. You know, our van was broken into, all our equipment taken. And we had gone through this enough times at that point that we opened the back of the van, and Nancy and I just laugh out loud.
Well, it's gone.
We laugh out loud. We go, well, we need new stuff anyway. Thank you, Lord. And that was so funny. He just sticks his nose in far enough that the Lord can chop it off.
Yeah.
Now, I remember a lot of things while we were together. It seems like we were together for years, but it was basically a year or so. What made it feel like a lot was going on was the fact that the Lord told me to call Nancy about a month after we got to Ruxley Lodge and got booked in. It went up to 21 people in that house occasionally.
Fortunately, it was big enough to hold everybody.
That was an amazing place. The thatched roof, and I guess it was the lodge for the big castle that was up on the hill, Ruxley Castle. They made it into this posh place, and it wasn't too far down the road from Moody Blues and
Cliff Richard.
Richard and Jeff Beck, and it was a kind of an interesting neighborhood for us to end up in. But how in the world did that place get booked for the band?
Well, when we first, we were in Northern Ireland, like I said, for that time period. And then the very first Greenbelt Festival, which is still going on, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That was in 1974. It happened. Jim Palisseri, who was part of Lonesome Stone, Jesus Movement people.
Uh-huh.
And going back even further, he was part of a tent ministry we were with for a few months. He was connected to the main ministry of that. Anyway, they were an offshoot of an Illinois group of Christians, and he started this group called Lonesome Stone, which was a theatrical group in London. And they moved to London, and they lived there, and they had a house there in London. And he started this very first Greenbelt Music Festival. There was probably 1,000 people that came during the 2 or 3 day event. Mm-hmm. Now they get multiple thousands.
Right.
And so anyway, we heard about it, and we decided to go over there and see if we could crash it. You know, basically, I wonder if we can play. So we all got in the van, and we took the ferry over to Stranraer, for Larne to Stranraer, Scotland, drove down to eastern England, and got there that night, and they were nice enough to welcome us and put us in a tent that night. And so we slept in a tent, and then we ended up getting two of the best slots of the whole festival, you know.
Wow.
And Word Records was there, the Christian label Word Records. They just started a new label called Myrrh.
Right.
And Norman Miller, who was the A&R director, and Ian Hamilton, who was the son of the owner of the Word Records UK, they were there at the festival scouting out new talent. And they heard us, and they said, we'd love to do a record with you. And we thought, we'd love to do a record with you. We don't know what the heck we're doing. But we've always wanted to do one. And so it really required us moving from Northern Ireland to London. And so we ended up staying at that Jesus People house in South London for, I don't remember how long, until we found that place, Ruxley Lodge. And I imagine Paul, who's a leader of the band at that time, pretty much, Paul Lyon, I'm sure he and David Bynum were probably the instigators of that, and they found that place for rent. It wasn't cheap. I don't know how we did it. You know, we weren't supported by a church. And
so
I stayed out of the accounting
part. Wasn't backing you guys at all, huh?
Not financially. Spiritually,
spiritually was a base.
Yeah. But not financially. You know, we were on our own, which was very interesting.
that was his college education.
So they found that place, and we moved in and got out of South London, and we moved to, it was just a little bit south of London from there. It was outside a little town called Claygate. England. It just fit our needs perfectly. And that's, then y'all came.
Yeah.
And then Stevie Houston came, and his wife, Heather.
Now, in that period, right in there somewhere, you guys came back to the States, and we did that, and you did that
Hill Country Festival.
Yeah. And at that point, I think David
was leaving to go back to school to finish his accounting degree.
Yeah, exactly.
And he had been the bass player. Well, he'd been the sax player and the bass player. And he decided it was time for him to do that. So he did that. And then we were in need of a bass player. But we'd come home for that summer to visit family. And that festival was going on. We played there. Our album had just come out, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
In England. I don't think it was being distributed in the U.S. yet. And that's when I met you.
And so I got tacked onto the bass edition, which was my brother, which was a good choice.
Great bass player.
Yeah, good singer too. And then you thought, well, Joe Cocker on one end of the stage would be pretty good. And then we'd have Robert Plant playing high classical rock on the other end of the stage. And Chicago and Eagles in between.
Yeah, it was all mixed up.
Lordy.
We were always mixed up.
That blew the tent pegs down everywhere we started going. But talk about blew the tent pegs down. When they hooked us up with Chuck Gerrard coming, so that we introduced him as a solo artist to Scandinavia, all of Europe and the UK on a massive, I think it was 6 weeks or something.
It was a long
tour.
Yeah.
It was way long.
And it was really cool for us because he was really, the Love Song was a total influence on us vocally when we were starting out.
That's right.
Once we found out there were other Christian bands out there, we started listening to Love Song. We thought, oh man.
Yeah.
And then to have the chance to actually back up this guy was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was an awesome tour, except for...
Dun,
now,
dun, dun.
You had an appendix that blew up. Where did that happen, in Holland?
I started getting sick in Scandinavia.
In Scandinavia. Then we came over...
We came over on the ferry from Denmark to Germany, I think it was, and I was just getting sicker. So it was a few days. We played outdoor in Hamburg, and I thought... You know, we were driving, after the gig, we were riding the van together. I said, guys, where's your appendix at? And Stevie, you pointed to your head, and somebody else pointed to their arm, and Stevie Houston said, I'll show you where it's at. And he lifted up his shirt, and he had a big scar where it was.
Oh.
I said, oh, man. So then we got to Zwolle, Holland, for a gig that night, and I got out of the van, and I collapsed.
Yeah.
And the organizer came over, stuck me in his car, took me to the hospital, and they immediately did surgery.
Yeah,
because it had ruptured, and
but it had been ruptured for a while.
I should have been dead.
So you had peritonitis, basically.
Bad.
And you were on the verge.
Yes, I should have been dead. And I think Chuck Gerrard played drums that night.
Oh, that night, before we got the Holland guy?
Yeah. If I remember correctly, he played drums.
Did you ever meet that Holland guy?
I did not.
What?
I've heard videos of him. He was a good drummer.
And the band had traded off the Dodge van for a Ford Transit that we had to push on to the ferries.
On off the ferry.
And there he had a couple of benches in the back. And the Holland drummer Nancy was there, and I don't remember whoever else's wives were there. But he just changed clothes right there in the back of that Transit van.
Oh, no.
And it was just, it was Europe. Definitely Europe.
I ended up staying in the hospital for a good month and a half, I think.
It was the whole tour.
It was the rest of the tour, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember hearing you guys. They had brought in a radio into my hospital room. I shared with five other guys.
They did a streaming thing from one of the big festivals or something?
I think it must have been. I just remember hearing y'all, and you're saying, yeah, hi, Randy.
He's a cush.
You're in the hospital. We're not. And
and
wouldn't bite like that. I went, oh, man.
Thank you, Jesus. Y'all say thank you, Jesus. For saving my appendix.
Yeah, there was only one person that spoke English in the whole hospital that I know of, and that was a nurse.
Oh,
but all the guys in my room were Dutch, and it was...
Oh, gosh.
It's a very odd time.
I don't know why. I can't remember details about that, probably, because I was newly married, and I was also just kind of scrambling to figure out what my place was, probably. But we were all just really busy.
We were all trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was a hard situation to be in, and this is part of my memory. Our church back in San Marcos thought we really needed to come back and become normal people.
Oh, well, you know, there's a concept.
You know, we were getting too famous overseas, you know. I mean, we weren't the Beatles or anything, but we were getting known as a great rock band, you know. Your piano playing, Dwayne's bass playing, and Stevie Houston on keyboards, and all the rest of the guys. We were a very good band to listen to, an interesting band, because we played classical slash hard rock slash country slash blues music. Mm-hmm. And it was totally new over there. You know, but the church really thought we should go back. While I was in the hospital, I really felt like God was directing me to Bible college. I want to go to Bible college, which I did for a little while.
Yeah.
Whether that was God or not, I have no idea. Yeah, I learned a little bit of Greek, and that was about it.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
Who that was for.
But it was not easy coming back. I had to sell my drums, get a ticket back. My wife, Dawn, and I, and our brand new baby, Jessica, who was just a few months old at that time. The church did get us an apartment for a month that we could stay in. After that, we were on our own. And I was like, now what do I do? I know how to drum. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I've got a family to take care of. So I ended up getting all these odd, crazy jobs, you know. Mm-hmm. I was a short order cook at a truck stop. I worked at a furniture factory and all this stuff just to make ends meet.
Well, you did that pretty good at Rexley Lodge.
Yeah. I got to cook for a mass of people there.
Yeah, you did.
But God, fortunately, God knew what was going on.
Absolutely.
And I never lost faith in it. It was troublesome. It was very difficult to go through. But I'm still here, and I'm still...
Do you remember any of those pivotal moments where, not that you were losing faith or anything, but that you just felt like it was so disjointed, you said, Lord, talk to me a little bit here. Could you just coax me through this?
I have one event that stands on my mind. It involves you and Nancy. I was working as the short order cook. I was on the night shift at Carson's Restaurant in San Marcos. It was right on the freeway.
Uh-huh.
So I was cooking eggs and bacon and pancakes and chicken fried steak at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd get off at 7 in the morning.
That's why I was there. I don't know.
No, you weren't there. You came by our house. We were living, we were renting a house for $50 a month on right off Scott Street in San Marcos. It belonged to a doctor's office in front, and a Vietnamese family had lived in it for a while, painted these wild colors, but you know, you can put a nail for a picture up on the wall and pull it out and look outside. You know, there was no insulation, but it was $50 a month.
Yeah.
And I could afford that.
Yeah, what are you going to get?
And so I'd come off the shift. We had a mattress on the floor in the bedroom. I won't forget that. And I was asleep in bed, and you came up to the edge of the bed. You were coming to say goodbye. You were moving to California. I don't remember seeing Nancy there, but I remember you coming up to the edge of the bed, waking me up. And I thought, wow, this is weird. You know,
that is weird.
He's going on with his life and his music, and here I am, a pancake flipper at Carson's Restaurant.
What the heck is going on here?
So that stands on my mind for whatever reason. But after that, I really got turned off to Christian music. Well, not your music, but Christian music in general, because it had become so packaged, commercial. And that's not why we got into it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Right. We wanted to be famous. We wanted throngs of thousands loving our music
but
and loving
for the
us.
Right reason.
But for the but mainly our reason was to spread the gospel. Okay.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to say it, the other part wasn't good either, because it. Your ego always needs that kind of stuff, and that's not necessarily good or bad, just what it was. So I got away from Christian music for a good 8-9 years and got involved in a country band, which I loved. I was raised on country music, so did that for most of the 80s until the very end. Oh, I started hearing Bob Bennett's music, which was not my kind of music, but his lyrics and his music were really spoke to me.
Yeah.
And it was his music that really brought me back around to wanting to get back into it,
which is when
I got Lip Sweet back together again. I thought, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah,
there was nothing wrong with it, but my calling at that time was really in Christian music, I thought, and evangelism, and I wanted to resurrect it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Bob Bennett's music, man, I still love his music to this day, but it changed my life at that point.
Huh.
Yeah, and then I started back,
Lip
Sweet back
really,
up.
Really did speak to you through it.
His lyrics were, real stuff.
Yeah,
real life, and it wasn't flash and smoke bombs going off and that kind of stuff.
Nothing formula,
right,
to anything that he does. Yeah, well, that's great. You've gone through a lot of thresholds, and none of them are the same. I mean, they're going the same direction, obviously. The thresholds are on the way to this moment right now. and you're back in a Western band. Now, it's not country anymore, it's Western, right?
Western swing is what they call it.
That's exactly what my dad played. I mean, he played in clubs, just the rhythm guitar for a country, everything was country.
Yeah.
In Texas then.
Well, this was Bob Wills' music. Bob Wills was from Turkey, Texas, and he, back in the late 20s, early 30s, he kind of put this music together, and he really loved the blues, too.
Yeah.
He loved Big Mama Thornton. He loved all these people, and he grew up listening to folks out in the cotton field singing, you know, so he had all this influence of music, and he put together a combination of hillbilly, blues, jazz, big band kind of music, and a very jazzy swing beat to it, very happy music.
Yeah.
If you're singing about something depressing, you're still laughing the whole way through it, you know?
Right.
So, like I said, I grew up with that music early in my childhood, and it sort of came back to me, and my wife and I moved up here to Oregon from Texas 13 years ago. There was not a lot of Western swing up here, and I loved Western swing, and I wanted to get back into music, but I didn't want to blues. I love all kinds of music. I had a blues newspaper for a while, so I love blues music, but I didn't want to do a blues band up here because there were so many blues bands.
Yeah.
And so many cover bands, and I thought,
because everybody's got the blues up here.
Yeah. Well, you can't help it.
When you can't see the sun for 3 months.
That's it. You're depressed. But I wanted to get a niche, and that was a good niche to have. In Texas, everybody's in a Western swing band. I mean, it's a state music test. But it was something I always wanted to do, was put a swing band together, and I thought, why not? It was a very difficult thing to do up here because nobody knew how to play Western swing.
Yeah, where are you going to find people?
So I was going to church here in Salem, and I was playing drums on the worship team here for years. The rhythm guitar player, a great rhythm guitar player, and he had a country background. I said, would you like to be in a band if I put it together? And he said, yeah. I said, I just want to get a bunch of nice guys together, enjoy playing together, let's make it fun, not try to take over the world or anything, and just give us something to do. And then I put a thing out on Craigslist and started meeting these different musicians, and I finally arrived at a group of musicians that I never knew before from Adam, met them on Craigslist, and I've got this perfect group of guys with...
Is that right?
I won't say no ego, but very little ego, who love just playing together and having fun and love...
Yeah,
dressing up in sparkly cowboy clothes like I do, and just do that whole shtick, and so we've done that for about 7 or 8 years now. It's called the Oregon Valley Boys.
And I got two CDs in my hand, Oregon Valley Boys.
We put out a couple of CDs. Most of the music on both those CDs are original music, so we write our own music.
Really?
Yeah. So we love writing music. Wow. I've got some very talented songwriters in the band, and. It's been a blast.
All roads lead to Howell Prairie.
Yeah, that's a road about
Twilight Zone. Huh?
It's about 5 miles from here. When I first moved here, Dawn and I used to get lost all the time. I tried to get from one place to another, and I knew if I could find Howell Prairie, which ran the length of the valley, I could find my way home. So that became our little song in the car. All roads lead to Howell Prairie.
Cool.
And then we wrote a song about it.
Well, this is one of my favorite kinds of music. Obviously, I grew up with it too.
Yeah.
On the backside of nowhere, Texas.
So I did that, and I started a radio show about 6 years ago called Western Swing Time Radio Show.
Are you still doing that?
Still doing that. It's on 5 stations around the country, and there's one in Spain that plays it on a weekly basis. So
is that internet
somewhere.
Stations, or is it
It's a mixture. It's both internet and terrestrial. So
there's
a station in North Texas, KSEY FM, they play it on Saturday nights, Friday and Saturday nights, and one in Illinois, and one in Spain, 2 here in Oregon, and I just do it for
seems like
fun the music.
Up in the Midwest, they really gravitate to the Western swing and the kind of the old style country stuff a lot, especially the gospel stuff, the old time gospel thing.
Yeah, bluegrass,
it's
the whole
still
bit.
Big.
Well, Ray Benson and Sleep of the Wheel, which are huge in the Western swing arena, they're originally from Virginia, I believe, or at least lived in Virginia for a long time, and he really doesn't have that background, but they made Western swing music. They brought it back to life.
Yeah. Well,
that's where I'm at right now.
In the midst of all of this, a new threshold presented itself, and Dawn, sweet Dawn, comes up with...
Colon cancer.
The big deal.
Who'd have thought?
Of your lives. Good grief.
Most traumatic thing she's been through that I've been through, I think, ever.
That's like running 90 miles an hour into a brick wall.
It was, and it changes your whole... Changes everything. It really changes
over and
your
over
life.
Again.
Yeah, and it will continue to change everything. It never quite leaves you, but I wouldn't want anybody to go through it. Not my worst enemy, but I'm truly of the belief that this is a teacher, R.C. Sproul, that I really love, And he says, if there's one maverick molecule in the universe, and God is not God, God has control of everything, okay?
Yeah,
He allows things to happen
either,
for a reason.
Either he's God or he's...
Or he's not.
Not God.
That's right.
I mean, it's not there's a percentage that he's God over. He made it all. He designed it. And what he's doing with it is his business. And I believe that totally. The continuity. If you do believe that, the continuity of everything starts to just blow your mind.
Yes, and makes life, everything you go through, a lot easier to go through.
I mean, the timing is, he makes time.
Yes.
I mean, give me a break. He makes time as it comes along.
Right.
I mean, he makes it come. And so he's fitting it all together, even as the fabric comes together. And it really is blowing my mind lately.
Yeah. Well, she was sick. Started about 3 years ago. We thought she had pulled a muscle in her side because it was hurting. It was like a muscle pain. And we both have allergies here in Oregon because that's what you get when you move to Oregon, is allergies. I never had allergy one in Texas, but
yeah,
I moved here and was like,
trees.
Oh my gosh. And so we thought that. And so that went on for a few months, but it got worse. And then she got diagnosed with diverticulitis,
yeah.
Which is no fun either.
No.
And I thought, we can, you know, they said, we'll put you on antibiotics and that'll take care of it, you know. Well, 2 weeks later, it got worse. And she had to go back to the emergency room. And eventually, long story short, what they diagnosed as diverticulitis twice was actually colon cancer. Once they'd gone in and taken out the section of her intestine to take it out and cure the diverticulitis, which they thought they had when they did that, when the pathology came back, no, she has colon cancer. The thing that I'd feared the most in my entire life had come upon me, as they say in the Old Testament.
Right, exactly.
And it really did. You know, I believed God was in control
all
these years, but his control over that too,
that's hard.
The night that I found out she had that was the most horrible night of my life. I went out in my car and drove, screamed, cried, begged, and pleaded, and dealt with it from there on. And she went through her own thing, you know, finding out, you know, she's got colon cancer. And so it's been this 2.5-3 year battle with that. She's had radiation. She's on her second round of chemo. The prognosis looks really good right now. Her oncologist says the big picture looks good, but she's got 2 or 3 more chemo treatments at this point, and then she's done. Then we have to check on her for 5 years so you're, quote, disease-free, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there's no sign of it right now.
That's good.
You never know. I mean, I have to prepare myself for the worst.
And I hate the chemo more than the
chemo's
even
bad. Chemo
the
tears
cancer.
You apart.
It, what it does, it takes you to the door of death.
Wears
kills
you
everything.
Out. Yeah, wears you out. And but our trust in Jesus being in control has helped us make it through it, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
what else we got?
Doesn't make it a whole lot easier, but that's where we're at now. Changed our lives, and we know God's in control. We keep going on. We got grandchildren to watch over. And
where's Jesse now?
Jessica is in Austin.
In Austin.
Texas.
Okay.
And Ethan just moved to North Carolina.
Did he?
Yeah. Just outside of Charlotte.
We're going out there.
His three sons.
He's out there in October.
You got to go see him. He got to go see you.
He's got to connect.
So I got 3 grandsons in North Carolina now and 1 grandson in Austin, and they're all going to become fabulous drummers.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Of course. International percussionists.
Their parents question that prophecy, but
yeah, they would. They got enough of that in there, right? Yeah. Well, just buy them a drum set.
That's right. Well, I've got a couple reserved. Some of my old ones. I hang on to everything.
Yeah. Well, man, it's good to catch up.
You know, I spent a lot of time when we lived at Ruxley Lodge. I can remember, you may not remember, but we walked around the Crescent, and I was trying to figure all this out at the time, and we just talked, and it was multiple times I walked around that circular road.
Yeah,
I don't remember how, it was pretty long, and we'd talk about life and what was going to happen and what happened, and that's good memories for me, and it's good here, you know, 40 years later to still be able to sit here and talk to you about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that cool?
It is very, very
we can pick up where we kind of left off.
Yeah. Those were special times. That was a pivotal time, I think, for all of us. I mean, I haven't talked to the Lyons brothers or anything.
Everybody.
We were all, like, just kind of flapping in the wind of the Holy Spirit. But that was what was carrying us along. We just put our sails up and take off.
I am thankful that it happened. It had nothing to do with me, for sure. I don't think it had anything to do with anybody else. It was a total thing that God did.
Yeah.
He took these guys who, we were good, but we weren't great, you know,
yeah,
and used us for that whole story.
Well, thanks, man. I really know that we're brothers.
Yeah, we are.
Forever. And we look forward to the next chapter of our lives, and I have a feeling it's going to get even more exciting as we go along.
I don't know if I can take much more excitement.
I guess that's why we have to get new bodies and equipment.
The old one can't take it anymore.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can't you see what he's done for me? He died to set me free from my condition. And when I fall, on him I call. He always picks me up, he's my redemption. A heavy load, but then I called from the darkness on the ground. Behold, the lost is found. Grace will flow, and when condemnation tries to kill me, and he can save, he's conquered even the grave. Oh, you know he's my one and only. Come, as to say his kingdom's come, and loving God is fun, but it's not easy. And if to him you give your life, be prepared to live your life in a way that in his sight it will be pleasing. Mm-hmm.
All the music you hear me sing on Terry Clark and Friends can be found at our website, catalystpeople.com. CATALYST, like in chemistry, people.com. Please come visit us soon.